Penguin Random House Audio presents Last Stand at Papago Wells by Louis L'Amour. Read for you by Jason Culp. Chapter 1. He had stopped last night in the Gunsight Hills, making dry camp because others had reached the waterhole before him, and he preferred to avoid other travelers. At daybreak, he came down out of the hills and made a little dust as he struck westward with Yuma Crossing in his mind. Logan Cates had the look of the desert about him, a brown, seasoned man with straight black hair above a triangular face that was all bone and tight-drawn, sun-browned hide. His eyes, narrow from squinting into sun and wind, were a cold green that made a man stop and think before he looked into them a second time. He was a tall man, wide in the shoulder and lean in waist and hips, an easy-moving man with none of the horseman's awkwardness in walking. He moved like a hunter when on his own feet, and had been a hunter of many things, men not least among them. His hat was black and flat-crowned and flat-brimmed, held beneath his jaw by a loose thong. His shirt, once red, had faded to an indeterminate rose. His vest was of black cowhide, worn and scratched, and over his black jeans he wore fringed shotgun chaps. He wore a tied-down Smith & Wesson Russian 44 six-shooter, and the Winchester in his saddle scabbard was the vintage of 73. The horse he rode, a long-legged zebra dun, had a wicked eye that hinted at the tough, resilient, and often vicious nature within. A horse of many brands, he had the speed of a frightened coyote and an ability to go without water equal to any camel or longhorn steer. Logan Cates was a man without illusions, without wealth, place, or destination. In the 18 years since his parents died of cholera when he was 14, he had driven a freight wagon, punched cows, hunted buffalo, twice gone over the trail from Texas to Kansas with cattle, scouted for the army, and had ridden shotgun on many stages. Twice, also, he had been marshal of boomtowns for brief periods. He had lived without plan, following his horse's ears and coping with each day's problems as they arose. Not an hour out of the Gunsight Hills, he drew rein in the bottom of a dry wash and crawled to the lip of the wash to survey the desert. Lifting his head among some small boulders to keep from skylining it, he studied the situation with care, having long ago learned that vigilance was the price of life in Indian country. Far away toward the line that divided Mexico from Arizona was a dust cloud. 10, he judged. Maybe 12 riders. The knowledge was disturbing, for when so many men came together in this country, it spelled trouble, and no news had come his way since riding out of Tucson almost 4 days before. And he knew enough of the desert to the south to realize no man would ride there without desperate reason. A dozen men could mean a posse, a band of outlaws, Indians, or an army patrol out of Fort Yuma. The latter was highly improbable, as there had been no trouble in the area for some time, and the Apaches rarely came so far west. Yet with Churupati in the field, no dependence could be placed on that guess, for his mother had been a Yaqui, giving him ties in western Sonora. Returning to the saddle, Logan Cates resumed his westward trek, moving more slowly and trying to lift no dust. Considering this group of riders to the south and the three who had last night stopped at Gunsight Wells, the country was becoming too busy for comfort. The three at Gunsight had been too far away to distinguish details, but their fire had been far larger than any Indian would build. The trail he followed lay 50 yards off to his right, for Logan Cates had an aversion to leaving his tracks where they might be easily seen. As it was, his trail was unlikely to be found unless by riders coming into the trail from the south. All travel in this western Arizona desert was circumscribed by the necessity for water and the fact that in several hundred square miles there were only a few widely scattered waterholes, and none of these reliable in a dry season. No matter what route a man wished to take, his trail must at some time touch these waterholes, for without them he would die. Ahead of him, and at least 20 miles from his camp of last night, lay one of these waterholes. It lay in the gap through which went the trail west, but he had been warned in Tucson that the waterhole might be empty, and it could in no case be depended upon. The nearest water beyond the gap was at Papago Wells, on the edge of the lava beds to the south, a good 20 miles further. Unless all signs failed, he would find company at one or both waterholes, but there was no help for it. This was a land of little water and less rain, where trails were indicated by the bones of men and animals that had died beside them, and all lines of travel were dictated by the urgency of water. Trails from all directions would converge on the waterhole in the gap ahead of him, and if that tank proved dry, then he must ride at once for Papago Wells, a grim and lonely place with its three dark pools lying in their basins of bluish-black basaltic rock. Beyond this place, the nearest water was at Tule Tank, 30 miles further on the Yuma Trail, although an Indian had once told Cates of a place called Heart Tank in the Sierra Pinta north of Papago Wells. Nobody else he knew had heard of Heart Tank, and Cates knew how slight were the chances of finding water without adequate directions. Such a tank might exist high in the rocks, as at Tinajas Altas, where men had died within a few feet of water they could not find, or who lacked the strength for the climb to its place among the high rocks. It was very hot. Logan Cates squinted his eyes against the shimmering heat waves and studied the dust of the riders who had camped last night at Gunsight Wells, who were also heading due west. A glance to the south indicated the larger group had drawn closer, but were still distant by many miles. It would be well to ride up to Papago with a ready gun, for in this country many a man had been murdered for his horse. Several times he drew up to study the country, uneasily aware that for this lonely desert there was too much movement. At this moment, unknown to him, half a dozen parties of horsemen were riding toward an unexpected rendezvous at Papago Wells, and with each rode the shadow of fear, and some had already been brushed by death. Far to the north, on another trail toward the gap, were two riders. As yet, they knew nothing of those who rode south of them, and were concerned with nothing in that direction, but from time to time they turned to look along their back trail, and of the two, the man showed the greater apprehension. Tall and spare, he carried himself in the saddle as a former cavalryman should. His features were clean cut, his mustache trimmed carefully, and under the brim of his white hat, his eyes were piercing blue. Unquestionably handsome, he had the appearance of a strong, purposeful man, and despite the powdering of the desert dust, the black coat he wore looked trim and neat. He was a man who rode well and went armed, and the horse he rode was a splendid chestnut, bred for the Virginia hills rather than these sandy, rock-strewn wastelands. The man rode with assurance, and the girl he rode beside was quick to notice it. She was tall, her dark hair drawn back and knotted loosely, her eyes blue-gray and large. Her every feature indicated breeding, yet there was something more than breeding or beauty in her face. There was a hint of fine steel, not yet honed to a cutting edge.
"Do you think your father will follow us?"
"He'll follow."
"What will it serve if we are already married?"
"He'll kill you, I think. He's my father, but he's a brute, and I saw him kill a man once. I believe I've hated him ever since."
"Someone you knew?"
"No, only by sight. I had seen him around the town, and once he had come to the ranch, but he was young and handsome. I quite lost my heart to him when I was 10 or 11, and then my father killed him. I never knew why."
Dust climbed around them, and the desert offered no sound but the sound of their travel. Despite the heat, the girl on the gray horse looked neat, cool, perfectly composed. She was, Grant Kimbrough decided,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?